Hi, this is Jean again. Linda and I are going to do a joint podcast. We're going to talk about how we first made contact, the circumstances surrounding when we met, and the events that have happened through the years that we've been working together. I first want to just say that Dan Harmon was very effective in one, causing me to look crazy through his friends in the press. But I think more important than discrediting me to the public was discrediting me so that Linda and I were not brought together. I think he saw the potential hazards to him if she and I did get together. And that's what we're going to talk about. So Linda's here with me. Hey, Linda.
Hi, this is Linda. And the only thing I would like to say to that, Jean, is that, you know, he used that approach with everybody. He didn't want anybody getting along. He didn't want anybody cooperating with each other. He wanted everybody to think the other one was out to get them or against them in some way. He didn't want us comparing notes and everything because it was dangerous for him. It's harder for him to do what he was doing.
Yeah, well, I've always admired his intelligence. If he had been working for the good, we would be in a really good place in Arkansas and Saline County. But
that's true.
It didn't work out that way. So do you remember what prompted you to, you know what, I think I want to talk about when I realized that you were clued in on Harmon. And we actually, both of us have written about when you were labeled a Clinton basher because you were on the video Clinton Chronicles, I think it was. And Pat Matriciana had talked to both of us. He's the one that produced Clinton Chronicles. He also produced our video, Obstruction of Justice, the MENA Connection. But when he contacted both of us, he immediately wanted us to get together. But I did not trust you yet because I didn't know that you had figured out that Harmon was using you and using the grand jury and using Amita to cover up his own involvement in the murders. But Pat did get you interviewed telling your story, and you were included in the Clinton Chronicles and, of course, eventually labeled a Clinton basher, which was not the case, and we do explain that in some of our updated written commentaries. Pat sent me a copy of the Clinton Chronicles, and my husband and I sat down to watch it, and we watched your interview, and you did not mention Dan Harmon. And I looked at my husband, I said, she knows. So I contacted my brother. You had contacted David to try to get a hold of me. And I said, no, she's just trying to find out where I am for Harmon. And when I watched the video and knew that you weren't talking about Harmon anymore, I knew that you knew. So I called my brother and he called you. And then we started talking on the phone.
That's right.
Right.
You know, it took me way too long to figure out that Harmon was not my friend and was not trying to do anything to solve the case. You know, and people tried to tell me for a long time. You know, they would call me with information. They would, you know, tell me things. And, you know, but I always went back to the fact, in my mind anyway, that Harmon had helped us when nobody else would help us. And it just didn't click for me that, you know, I didn't understand how any human could befriend Larry and I the way Harmon did us, having participated in the murders. I just thought that is just beyond reality. You know, I had slowly come to the conclusion that he was involved in at least using drugs at a minimum, maybe even trafficking them some. Took me a while to get there even. So, you know, it was a very slow process for me because of course, he was working me, you know, and playing me, and I fell right into the game with him. Like I said, I was very close to him. I talked to him a number of times every day of the world. I probably spent more time with him than I did Larry at that point. And I just, you know, I just couldn't go there. My mind didn't accept that. But I did come to that realization.
I'm thinking that nobody could come to the realization that somebody could be so evil as to actually be a part of the murders and then take advantage of you, get close to you, take money from you and Larry, which happened to be Kevin's insurance money, life insurance money. Harmon got that.
Absolutely, he did. I, you know, like I said, it was a very slow process for me, and I don't know, I guess it just had to sink in slowly. And it really was just an insignificant event that turned the tables completely for me. I look back at it now, and you know, with all of the information that I probably had, you know, that something so insignificant could, you know, make me change my mind so completely. I had an opportunity to talk to a young teenage girl who had been at a party. And I had heard about it for some time because we'd always, and I'd been interested because we had heard that Kevin and Don had been in a party earlier that night. So At some point I decided to try to contact her. She had left town, and but I did make contact with a relative and talked with her on the phone. And, you know, the only new information for me from that conversation was that she had been at a party. She wasn't from here. She didn't know any of the kids. She had no idea if Kevin and Don had been at that party, that she knew hardly anybody, but she knew that there were some police officers, and she knew that Richard Garrett was there. And, you know, I'm sitting there trying to process what she's saying. And I said, well, if you didn't know anybody there, especially kids, how would you know Richard Garrett and who he was? And she said, because his wife was my teacher at Harmony Grove High School, and his picture was on her desk. She said, so I knew who that was. And she said, I knew he was a prosecutor. And she said, it scared me to death because I thought we were all going to be busted. And so in my mind, that's all it took to put me over the edge of, you know, actually seeing what was going on under my eyes. And because I, you know, I felt that if Richard Garrett was involved in drugs and okay, that teenagers were at a party where drugs were present and that he was there partying with him, I knew that Dan Harmon most likely was, because they were connected at the hip in that time period. And you didn't see one without the other. And so, I mean, that's all it took for me to say, you know what, all of these people are telling me the truth. And I didn't want to let on to Harmon that I knew, you know, what he was doing at that point. Number one, I was so hurt. Number two, I was just, it was hard for me. It was hard for me to even think about knowing some of the times, conversations and things that Larry and I had shared with Dan Harmon.
Well, you played along for a while.
Oh, I did.
And in fact, you played along when he asked you to go with him to the U.S. Attorney's office.
I did.
Chuck Banks. And what was that about?
Well, Dan Harmon's daughter, Tammy, was subpoenaed to testify in front of the federal grand jury. And Dan Harmon called me up, and of course, at that time, he thought we were still the best of friends. And I was over there in my corner, stomping and screaming, kicking and carrying on to myself about what a fool I'd been played for, and received a phone call asking me if I'd go with him to the federal courthouse so he could support Tammy and offer her testimony in front of the grand jury. And that's the last thing I wanted to do, was be in his presence at that point. But I didn't want to let on him that I had, you know, turned or whatever you want to call it. And so I just thought, I'm just going to play along with him and see what I can find out, and I'll play him a little bit. And so I agreed to go with him. I didn't want to, but I did.
You stepped off the elevators, and
when, you know, that grand jury really was meeting in secret, and it had not been made public to the general public anyway. There had been no news coverage about it or anything. I was unaware of it, you know, until then, and didn't even know they were hearing anything about Kevin and Don or Saline County either. So, you know, you didn't see news coverage of it like we did in Saline County with the county grand jury, where the media was notified of everything that went on in the grand jury, including the testimony of the witnesses. But there had been none of that, and I assumed there would not be anything like that. And I just thought, well, I'll go on up there and see what I can see. Literally had to grit my teeth to be in the same room or anything with Dan Harmon at that time. But we were on the elevator riding up to the second floor where the courtroom was, where the grand jury was meeting. And when the elevator doors opened, I was shocked to see a whole array of TV cameras, other cameras from newspapers, and everything was full of the media, just, you know, cameras clicking in my face all over the place. I was just shocked because that was totally unexpected. And I looked over there against the wall and saw several people standing there, and I had not met Jean, seen photographs of her, of course, in the media during the big campaign against her. And of course, I had believed everything that Harmon had told me about Jean Duffy. You know, I thought she was probably one vile, evil human being. And so, you know, I immediately noticed her standing there, and I thought, well, I'm going to get to see Jean Duffy today. You know, nothing else is accomplished. I'll get to see who Jean Duffy is, because I had been trying to contact her through one of her brothers, and she didn't trust me enough to talk with me or anything. So I thought, well, maybe I can use this to my advantage. And so I looked over there at her, and of course they were all looking at me. I was looking at them and they were looking at me. And of course, Jean, and I'm sure everybody else there, was thinking, what an idiot she is.
Well,
you know?
Kinda, yeah. But it's just every time I saw you or read something about you, it was just breaking my heart of what I knew about Harmon. But I thought at that time, I thought you were still, I mean, there you were with him. So of course you're still 100% in his corner. And my husband, I was there to testify, supposedly. It didn't turn out that way. And I think I talked about that in my previous podcast. But I looked over at my husband, who was there to support me, and I said, when is Linda Ives going to figure it out? And I had no idea that you had already figured it out. So it was very soon after that that we got together.
Right. I think the first time we met was in John Brown's wife, Karen's, place of employment in an office where she was employed. Uh-huh. When Jean and I and John Brown all got together and talked, and Jean and I began talking regularly and sharing information and sharing documents and everything. And but you know, I mean, that was Harmon's style, and you know he played everybody against each other to his advantage.
One thing before you go on, because I don't think you've mentioned it in any of your other podcasts, is that Harmon was called into Banks's office.
Yes. I was unaware of it at the time, but he was called into Banks' office, and he had a little sack, a small sack with something in it, which I didn't know what it was. Later learned it was a videotape that was confirmed by Bob Govar, who was a federal deputy prosecutor at the time, that Harmon delivered a videotape to Chuck Banks. And, of course, also learned later on and knew after looking at a lot of things the second go round and time when I started reevaluating everything that I knew, that Harmon had come into possession of some sexual type tapes of some elite prominent people in Saline County level and state level also, from a house that they had set up as a party house where they supplied prostitutes and drugs to prominent people in order to film them and to blackmail. To blackmail them. And so, you know, of course, in my mind and everybody else's mind, including the federal prosecutor, mm-hmm. at the time, you know, he had delivered a videotape that was to be used for blackmail.
And it worked. Because it wasn't very long after that Chuck Banks held his press conference and just right out of the blue, unexpectedly, just cleared Harmon, wiped away, what was it, 2 years of Bobco Barr's investigation of corruption in Saline County. He cleared Harmon, cleared all public officials.
All his relatives, even.
All Harmon's relatives.
And he had walked in there looking at several felonies just for different things, including tax charges and things like that. And when he came out, he only had, I don't know how many now, misdemeanors instead of felonies. It worked. I can say that it worked. And I think that it's just like what's going on in a national level now. They use women, sex, drugs for blackmail.
Well, it works.
It does. So it's very effective, obviously.
And we will do a podcast. It'll be a little bit later on because we're getting ready to launch the website on August 23rd, which is the 32nd anniversary of Kevin and Don's murders. But we're kind of crunched for time to get that launched. But a little bit later on, we are going to tell the scandal, the Saline Memorial Hospital scandal, which set up the party house and the blackmail case. And to make it very clear, Harmon put himself in the position of being special prosecutor for that case, and all of the evidence was delivered to him, which was a box full of videotapes, which we know that Elmendorf, Chief of Police Elmendorf, delivered to him from a search warrant. And those tapes were never seen again after they were dropped off at Harmon's. And the defendants in that case were all pled out. So a jury or a judge didn't get to see those tapes. So we really don't know what was on them. We can only speculate.